If the contagion does spread, there's a pretty good chance it'll reach Ireland. It's a country with high debt, and it boasts some of the lowest corporate and personal taxes in the developed world. But as NPR's Jim Zaroli reports now from Dublin, that system may soon come to an end.
I'm standing in the Grand Canal area of Dublin, a very beautiful sunny morning, sailboats bobbing in the water. There's kind of a mix of older industrial buildings here and a lot of very new contemporary office buildings that have sprung up here. I'm sitting here with Barry O'Leary of the Investment and Development Agency of Ireland. What are some of the companies that have located in this area lately?
Companies in the area here where we're sitting. Accenture would have a very large operation here. Facebook have just come. And across the river you have people like Citibank here. So
as he gestures toward the waterfront, O'Leary says foreign companies have come to Dublin lately for a lot of reasons, but a major one is taxes.
The low corporate tax rate is a very, very important part of the package of attractions that Ireland has to offer the multinationals. And we have found that that has attracted a good deal of new foreign direct investment to Ireland.
And it's not just corporate taxes that are low here.
What Irish governments did was really they cut all kinds of taxes.
Fintan O'Toole, a columnist for the Irish Times, says over the years, Ireland has cut taxes in a way that has endeared it to conservatives.
If you were working in Ireland, well, very large numbers of people were kept out of the tax net altogether. So if you were low paid, you basically didn't pay any tax. But even middle class people were paying what, by European standards, were pretty low rates of taxation.
But O'Toole says the downturn of the past few years has exposed some problems in Ireland's tax structure. The government depends heavily on consumption taxes, which have dropped off sharply. And partly because of government policies that encourage property development, Ireland has just been through a Las Vegas-style construction boom, and property tax revenues went through the roof. The government spent money like crazy, says Mark Fielding of the Irish Small and Medium Enterprises Association.
The unsustained property taxes that the government were taking was giving the government a false sense that this money is there to be spent and we can actually take this money in and there will be no end to it.
Now that the construction boom is over, tax revenues have slowed sharply and Ireland was left with a staggering budget deficit. The government insists it won't raise corporate taxes, but it has been forced to cut spending and raise wage taxes by about 4%. Fielding says the hikes have been painful but inevitable.
Our tax base was way too small for the economy, and too many people were not paying taxes. And again, of course, you'll have the social do-gooders saying, well, we can't afford to be taxing these people, but the facts of the matter are that without a tax base, then the economy just can't run.
Meanwhile, the construction boom that poured so much money into government coffers is over. Fintan O'Toole says thousands of empty houses and hotels litter the landscape. He says it calls to mind the 19th century when so many Irish people were forced to move away.
It's, you know, it's really sad to create that out of disasters like famines and immigration. It's really insane to create it out of a boom. So, out of prosperity, we managed to create all these empty houses, which have the same kind of ghostly presence on the landscape as the houses from the 19th century had.
The Irish government benefited from the boom, and it's having to figure out how to get by now that the boom is over. Jim Zaroli, NPR News.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. Employers have started hiring again in a big way. The government's official jobs report released this morning shows payrolls expanded by 290,000 last month. That's the strongest job growth in more than 4 years. The pickup in hiring drew a lot more people into the labor force, and that explains why the unemployment rate went up, not down. Still, President Obama said the numbers are heartening.
We now know that the economy has been growing for the better part of a year. And this steady growth is starting to give businesses the confidence to expand and to hire new people.
NPR's Tamara Keith reports on these latest numbers and what they tell us about who's hiring and who's holding back.
For months, the economic numbers have been positive, but the jobs numbers, not so much. That is, until now.
I think we can safely say that this is no longer a jobless recovery.
Bernard Baumol of the Economic Outlook Group is in a pretty good mood today.
The numbers that came out today were not only impressive, but what was equally surprising was the significant revisions that showed that employment was even better in some of the previous months.
With the revised numbers, it now appears the economy has generated more than 500,000 jobs so far this year, and only about 100,000 of them were temporary census jobs. Brian Silverstein just started work at a steel factory.
This is a company that buys coils of flat-rolled steel, curls them up, runs a weld bead down the side, and turns them into pipes.
Silverstein is a mechanical engineer with a PhD and had been looking for work for more than a year.
I'm thrilled. I am going to do my best for the company and make sure I am worth every penny they pay me.
In April, the fabricated metals industry, where Silverstein now works, generated 9,000 jobs. It was a bright spot in a manufacturing sector that itself was a bright spot in the jobs report. Dave Huther is the chief economist at the National Association of Manufacturers.
The gain was fairly strong. We had 44,000 increase, which is the best gain in about a dozen years.
He says the job growth was concentrated in durable goods and was driven largely by exports. Dow Corning has hired about 200 people since the start of the year to work in a component that goes into solar panels. Mary Lou Benicke is a company vice president.
This polycrystalline silicon, when it's produced, is expensive. It's expensive to buy, and we're shipping the majority of it overseas.
The company expects to hire about another 1,000 people over the next couple of years.
So we're looking for a lot of high-tech engineers. Skilled trades are in very high demand here.
But others express only cautious optimism. Steve Schulte is president of Portiking Building Systems in St. Louis. They make modular buildings used in factories.
Six, 7 months ago, it was certainly a pretty bleak picture. But today we are seeing an increase activity, which is a good barometer for the future.
Still, he's down 45 employees, and his facilities are operating at less than half of capacity. He wants to bring people back.
But I am not confident enough to bring on additional people this time, and we see more consistency in the order backlog.
Tom Dusterberg of the Manufacturers Alliance says it's important to remember where the industry has been lately.
All told, we've lost 2.2 million manufacturing jobs. We've gotten about 100,000 of them back in the last 3 months, so we're on the right path, but there is a long way to go.
Tamara Keith, NPR News, Washington.
Stocks fell around the world today, driven by fears that the debt crisis in Greece is a contagion spreading to other countries. The markets dropped despite U.S. and European assurances that Greece's troubles can be contained. Governments in Europe today put the final touches on a loan package to help Greece make its debt payments. To no avail. Investors worry that Greece's problems are just the beginning. NPR's Tom Gelton reports from Madrid.
The spreading debt crisis is reminiscent of the banking panic that shook the world in 2008. This time, governments seem determined to stay ahead of events. Finance ministers from the G7 countries discussed the debt crisis in a conference call today. The German and Dutch parliaments both approved the Greek bailout package. And still, the markets fell. Bond market investors apparently doubt that European authorities really grasp the seriousness of the debt problem. Spain, with a budget deficit nearly three times what it should be, is arguably the biggest European worry after Greece. And yet, here in Madrid, there's little outward sign of nervousness. The nightly cafe scene is as lively as ever. Spaniards appreciate the good life, and for the first 10 years after the introduction of the euro as their currency, life here was great. The Spanish economy grew almost as fast as China's, and Spaniards splurged. Gerardo Viada, a successful attorney here in Madrid, says no one saw a crisis coming. Everyone, he says, was buying new cars, buying new houses. Everybody went into debt. It was euro prosperity. Fernando Fernandez is an economist here in Madrid.
We became so successful in a way, so rich, that naturally people became complacent. And we thought we could just, you know, live on as business as usual.
But the prosperity was based largely on cheap credit. The introduction of the euro meant lower interest rates than Spain had ever seen. The spending boom fueled the economy. Banks all over Europe lined up to loan Spaniards money.
We used up a very large part of that credit in construction, which of course created a very large real estate bubble, which at some point had to burst.
The Spanish government, meanwhile, expanded social services. And then, suddenly, construction came to a halt. Unemployment soared. It's now over 20%. The government, with tax revenue sharply down, has to cover generous unemployment benefits. The situation here is not yet as bad as in Greece, but investors wonder, could it happen here as well? The word is contagion. Federico Steinberg, an economist at the Royal Elcano Institute, says such worries are exaggerated.
We need to calm down. If there's no effect of irrational contagion and the problem is constrained to Greece, other countries, particularly Spain and Italy, should do relatively well.
That's the government's line as well. After bond rating agencies downgraded their assessment of Spain's credit worthiness, Prime Minister José Luis Zapatero criticized them. Fernando Vallebriga of the Asade Business School here says the government should heed the market warnings, not dismiss them.
Agents that are lending to the government must be convinced that actually this government will not be defaulting at some point. From the Spanish perspective, it is a mistake to attack them, because some of the things they are saying are true.
Spain's government debt is still relatively low compared to that of other countries. But Spanish banks are deeply indebted, and they have government backing. That's part of what concerns the bond rating agencies, and investors are taking note. Spain, like Greece, has seen its borrowing costs increase. That'll make the government's budget problems only worse. Economist Fernando Fernandez.
Greece is not a distant problem. Greece is a mirror image of Spain in a couple of, probably months more than years, I should say. Unless we do the right things. We have no excuse. I mean, we now know what it takes.
In Greece, the crisis was spurred by markets losing confidence in the Greek government. Perceptions are important. And right now, investors are not in a trusting mood. Bad news for Spain and other governments whose finances may be questionable. Tom Gelton, NPR News, Madrid.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. On Wall Street today, a lot of head-scratching and finger-pointing. Industry and government officials are trying to figure out what caused 16 minutes of chaos yesterday, chaos that sent the Dow Industrials down almost 1,000 points and had some major stocks trading briefly for pennies. NPR's John Itzty reports.
The bizarre market meltdown yesterday afternoon started amid frenetic selling. Investors were unloading stocks and heading for the safety of U.S. Treasury bills and gold in response to the Greek debt crisis. But as the market fall accelerated at an eye-popping rate and then reversed course abruptly and recovered, it was clear something strange had happened. Today, in a brief digression during his statement on employment gains last month, President Obama tried to reassure investors.
I want to speak to the unusual market activity that took place yesterday on Wall Street. The regulatory authorities are evaluating this closely with a concern for protecting investors and preventing this from happening again.
On Wall Street, two big players were arguing about who caused the chaos, man or machine, computers that is. In separate interviews on the financial news channel CNBC, Robert Greifeld, head of the all-electronic NASDAQ market, was defending machines, and Duncan Niederauer, CEO of the New York Stock Exchange, which still has real people on its trading floor, was in the humans corner. Greifeld was clearly smarting from suggestions that high-speed computer trading programs had triggered the huge meltdown, so he criticized the humans at the New York Stock Exchange for briefly halting the trading of some big-name stocks like Procter & Gamble, 3M, and Accenture.
You have the primary market, the listing market, deciding not to support the stock, not trade it, to stop trading. That sends a signal. A signal to a very nervous market. And that signal was a negative signal that there's something wrong with this stock. So instead of standing behind it, they basically walked away from that.
But the NYSE's Niederauer says his exchange didn't walk away. it actually embraced its responsibility. Its human traders saw anomalies in the behavior of the stocks, he said, and decided to flip their single stock circuit breakers, pausing trading for 60 to 90 seconds.
We put the note out to the markets, and they have two choices in that next 30 to 60 seconds. They can wait and work with us. Yet yesterday, the other choice the electronic markets have is to trade through us, and that's exactly what all the markets did.
So the electronic markets, including the NASDAQ, continued to trade in the stocks. The problem was there were very few buyers, a lack of depth in market terms, and the bids were very low. So Procter & Gamble, which had been trading at about $60 a share, dropped 37% to below $40 on the NASDAQ. Accenture went from $40 a share to 1 cent a share. The problem, says Niederauer, is that no humans were involved to say those trades made no sense.
What clearly can happen is if you have a lack of depth on these electronic markets, a computer presses the button, it's indiscriminate.
And those distorted trades activated other sell programs that caused the Dow to drop over 700 points in about 10 minutes. Niederauer says the fall in just two stocks, Procter & Gamble and 3M, was responsible for 400 points of that loss. The incident yesterday clearly exposed a flaw in the way U.S. stock markets work with each other. One regulatory change that could emerge is a requirement that circuit breakers that slow trading in individual stocks be applied uniformly across all stock exchanges. The Securities and Exchange Commission and the Commodity Futures Trading Commission indicated they are focusing on just that kind of issue in a statement released late this afternoon. John Idstey, NPR News, Washington.